Are there still a lot of Swaffords in that area in Spruce Pine?
No. There's some. I have a cousin, a first cousin, my dad's brother's son, that we always went to school with and were our dearest friends. He's 93 right now. Just had a birthday recently. He's 93. He's not in too good health, but he's got a sister who's 91. But in my family, we went to the Four Winds, you might say, because of World War II. Or I guess you'd have to go on back, say, the Depression, because I had two brothers to drop out of school before they graduated from high school, and they went out to, quote, seek their fortune. And as it was, I don't know why they did it, but they left home when they were had finished about the eighth or ninth grade in school. But one of those now is the 93-year-old. But of those who, well, there's three boys that we have left in the family with a Swafford name, but you know, Sybil and I, we lost our son when he was 19 in 1963. He had just completed his sophomore year at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and that was on June the 6th, so we were just saying yesterday was putting up a new calendar for the month of June. I said on Saturday is the fateful day. It was just 19 years after D-Day that he lost his life at.
Oh, is that so? He just
finished his second year at the University of North Carolina and was home for the summer. And I was on temporary duty, we call it TDY, out to California, to Merced, taking checking out in the what we call the KC-135 tanker airplane. Incidentally, later, when I came back, I was the commander of the KC-135 squadron. I was the commander of the field maintenance portion of the KC-95 or KC-135 wing. Was a tanker wing. That airplane was originally the DC-9 that the airlines used, you know. And Douglas built that DC-9.
So you were overseas when your son was born?
No. I went overseas in 44. It took about a year to go through flight training, and then nearly another year to train on the B-24 to go to combat. So it took about 2 years there to get ready to go to combat. So I went over, I left at the end of June of 1944, was just a little over, well, it's just in the same month as D-Day was the 6th of June, you know, 44. So we were given an airplane in, from our training camp, we went to Topeka to pick up an airplane. They gave us a brand new airplane and had a crew of 10 on that airplane. And we flew it across the northern route up through eastern Canada and Greenland and Iceland and so forth to the British Isles. And we became part of the 8th Air Force.
What year was your son born?
Our son was born in 43. About a year after we were married, we had our son. He had his first birthday when I was, well, just about the time of the Castle mission. His first birthday. So, but there was only a couple of us on the crew who were married, and it wasn't always easy for the other members to understand what being married meant, you know, how the two of us who were married and had children, we knew how to communicate with each other, you might say, easier than it was with the other fellas, you know.
Who was the other crew member who was married?
As Waller. Joe Waller was, he was my ball turret man, but we got to England, and the first thing they said, give us this airplane, we're going to send it somewhere and take the ball turret off of it. Well, that cut us down to, when we got to our combat group, it says, you got to eliminate one of your men. It says, we don't have a ball turret, so you got to eliminate one. So we discussed it with my co-pilot, my crew chief, because those are the ones I'd always consult, you know, on matters like that. And I said, well, what do we do? And it was unanimous among us three that we eliminate one of the others and keep Joe Waller and put him in another position, because we didn't want to lose him.
So what position did he become?
Tail turret gunner. He was the first one to see the enemy on my aircraft on the Castle mission, because they're coming in from the rear. He had one definite kill and one probable. And my engineer manned the upper turret all the time when he wasn't. Normally the engineer would be standing up between the two pilots, you know, and we'd talk about the functioning of the airplane, the functioning of the engines and so forth. So we had to have him there to talk to us. But when we would get into enemy territory, he would man the upper turret. Mm-hmm. And he had a probable. So we had one kill and two probables assigned to my crew.